If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Got a thought. Hold that thought. Tell me about Whitley Bay on a bank holiday Monday.
It was a long time ago now, but someone that I went to school with moved up to Newcastle, and I went up on an August bank holiday weekend, and we ended up on the Monday in Whitley Bay, and it was... it was absolutely mega. There's people everywhere. It was carnage. Loved it. And clearly, it's still a thing to this day.
Is this one of those weird drinking things, like Rugby League has Mad Monday? Like, on a day you should not be drinking, you go out drinking.
It is a bit like that. I saw more women from the Northeast than I care to remember urinating just wherever they felt like it.
I've been to Whitney Bay. I can completely believe that story.
Yeah, Whitley Bay is a very good fun night out.
Have you been?
I've been a couple of times. I went on a pre-season rugby tour.
That's
like
exactly
team building tour. And did a tough training session. And then beers on the pitch at Percy Park, I think it was.
Percy Park is a common warm-up for everyone's pre-season.
Pre-season pod, Whitley Bay and Newcastle 2022.
Perfect.
Well, hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, back on Bank Holiday Monday for another podcast as we build towards a new season. I'm Tim in the rugby dungeon with Phil.
Hello, Tim.
He's been nursing a child who's following in his father's footsteps by having to have general anaesthetic and an operation.
Because of a traumatic head injury, much like many of my own, he's absolutely fine.
Good. Did you buy him my first surgery book?
Well, people were asking me, like a few people have said. So he cut his lip at nursery, fell over, hit his head on the table. Not a TLC match, as I've been telling some people. He's absolutely fine, but ended up having to have a GA for it, which was pretty traumatic for him. And my wife, but all okay.
Oh,
and
good.
People have been saying to me, like, oh, you're worried he's going to be scarred later. And I'm like, have you seen my face? I've got loads of scars.
No, chicks dig scars.
And they're cool. Yeah, look at me.
I'd pay for a few more scars, if anything.
And I'm here in this rugby dungeon with JB as well, covered in paint from the Phyllis Mabel.
Incorrect. I'm covered in primer, actually. Primer. I have got 5 coats of primer to put on this bloody thing. It's never ending. It's never ending.
Fourth bridge.
Yeah, it is. And this is just like the antifoul. I have done 4 days non-stop, and I've barely scratched the surface. Non-stop. So, yeah, might have bitten off more than I can chew here.
Well, I can vouch that my family will be more than happy for you to go away more often, because we've had the pleasure of your dog.
He is a pleasure, isn't he?
He's such a lovely dog. He's
by far the favourite member of my household.
And the best house trained member of your household.
Yes, true, absolutely.
True on all counts. And also, my news from the weekend is there's now 2/3 of the podcast are officially sub 20 5K runners.
Really?
So you need
nice.
To up your game.
Wow, that is impressive.
1945 on a park run.
I tell you what, awesome. That's really good.
It is. It's bloody impressive.
Well, I can tell you this for free. I will not be getting under. I have ran and I've ran and I've ran. I'm just not a good runner. I'm just not a good runner. I will not be doing a sub 25K.
You could. So with the right training program and dedication to it, you definitely could. But it's how much compromise would you need to do that? Because your weightlifting, if you've not got the at least a level of natural running ability, other aspects will have to be compromised to achieve it.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that. And also not been to CrossFit properly for 2 weeks now. And I feel flabby. I feel weak. I like my muscle tone has decreased and all sorts. It's horrible.
You can get in touch with us. And we welcome your emails and any thoughts. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Got one here from Gavin Hegarty, who just said, gents, I thought I'd share with you. I turned 40 recently. Well, happy birthday, Gavin.
Happy birthday, yeah.
And I had a few people over yesterday to celebrate. Hayden, a friend of his, produced The Attached. So many missing memories did not come flooding back. And there's the picture.
Oh, dear.
Dangerous gear.
Strong zero.
Jesus.
Japanese poison.
I've still got 5 of my 6 strong zeros remaining.
Gavin suggested someone should buy the distribution rights of it in Europe, as some nights are best forgotten.
Well, you can't buy the distribution rights for it in Europe because there's no trade deal which will facilitate it. Post-Brexit, I believe that we do have a trade deal that will indeed facilitate people dying of Strong Zero.
Let's get on Strong Zero.
Yeah, and rebrand it. What would we
business do? Venture.
Yeah, what would we... Actually, Strong Zero is perfect branding.
I'm amazed the Leave campaign didn't just have that as their single point of principle.
Yeah, it's astonishing, really, isn't it? Absolutely astonishing. So, that's... We might be getting Strong Zero on a more regular basis.
Wow.
Wonderful.
And we've been sent some quizzes and stuff as well, which I'll get into one of those later in the pod, but also from Patrick Tipsword. Love that name.
Great one.
He said, hi, lads. I know you might enjoy this one as you're a big fan of this player from the USA Eagles.
I've read this. It's brilliant.
I was finishing up my financial analyst job on a Wednesday and decided to go to the off-season Touch Rugby Fitness we have in Phoenix, Arizona. That's good to hear. Anyone nearby, go to that. Once I arrived, little did I know I would be playing with none other and pod favourite, Mikey Teo.
Mikey.
Oh, awesome.
I bet he is an absolutely unbelievable amateur player.
Incredible. That's
not a dig, but...
No, I do know. I know what you mean. Also, have you seen, he was mic'd up on a training session in season in the MLR this year. There was a little video going around. He's good. He seems like a good bloke.
Well, yeah, he was. Patrick can vouch for that. What a genuinely good bloke and hot stepper. I'm excited to see him play against Ireland on October the 30th in Vegas. Is that last this October 30th? What state is it? Nevada? Are they like Texas?
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, thank you for that, Patrick. Appreciate it. And that's good to hear you can get like American internationals popping down to a Touch game on a Wednesday night.
You certainly can.
Love it. I did actually look for the local Touch centre because I suddenly thought, oh, Wednesday night, actually, I might fancy a game, but Manchester's woeful. It's like Burnage and that's it.
Is that
Burnage.
Right?
Well, so there's adverts at Sale Sports Club for Spartans Rugby who do training sessions, which we're trying to convince, actually, because there is a women's one. I was trying to convince my wife to go down to it because she'd actually quite enjoy it, but she's not taking it up yet.
No.
Okay. Now, I'll look into that.
Disbury Talk H used to have a tournament go all the way through the summer, and it was always a toss-up for me whether I go and play touch or netball. And netball went out because it's a far superior game to touch rugby. But I think post-pandemic, all of these touch tournaments and all these get-togethers have still not quite recovered yet, is my feeling.
Yeah, I mean, we did get shared some action, some pictures from Bournemouth Sevens.
Bournemouth Sevens, that
this
like
weekend,
a
which
it?
Looked awesome.
Friend of the pod, Jamal Ford Robinson, loving it as well, doesn't he? We've clearly got him on the Seven Circuit now.
And Dave Mack as well, friend of the pod, reporting on the ground.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to read Dave Mack's reports. I wouldn't like to try and make sense of them, but I'm sure they had a grand time.
I'd like to see all of the photos on their WhatsApp group, though, based on the ones that we were sent.
Exactly.
So, yeah, nature is healing, rugby is returning. We're going to be looking at a few more Premiership clubs on this podcast as well as we look ahead to the season, which, in the case of what's the top 14 competition called now?
Top 14 is still top 14, but the Pro 14 is the United Rugby Championship.
That's right.
Of course.
The United Rugby Championship, is it?
Yeah, because there's the Green King Rugby Championship and, of course, the Rugby Championship.
Can they not think of something better than Championship? If there's like three... Because there's the Nations Championship or whatever it is as well, which is the second tier.
Yeah, the European Nations Championship. Rugby Europe Nations.
What was your affectionate name for the Pro 14?
The Hobby League.
The Hobby League, yeah. Just let's formalise that.
Yeah, the Hobby League, where international players have a hobby.
Call it the United Hobby League, if you want.
There's something more to it, isn't there? It's like a league. It's like a babysitting league, isn't it? It's a get-you-ready league, a permanent pre-season league.
Well, not now your beloved Benetton are champions of the Rainbow Cup, the existing tournament. It's more than a hobby league.
This is a serious point now. Do you know what the Hobby League really reminds me of? It reminds me of the worst excesses of Super League. Because Super League, in my opinion, should be the biggest league on the planet. Right? Rugby League itself should be the biggest sport in the world. It's amazing to watch. The athletes look great. They wear tight shorts.
If there was a sport with that shaped ball besides American football that could translate in the States, it would be rugby league. How have they not got on that?
How they fail at this is beyond me. But they fail constantly. Now, one of the reasons Super League failed, and I think the same for Pro 14, is the constant changing of the format. So if you're a fan of it or a casual observer, you have and same with Super Rugby as well. All three of these tournaments have the same thing going for them, which is every time that you switch on, it's like, what is it now? It's conferences, it's a playoff, it's a wild card playoff.
It's a top six playoff, it's a top four, it's a top eight. Yeah.
Like, you can't, it just can't settle. Whereas if you watch the Premiership, you can literally sit down, it flashes up a table, you know who's good, you know who's bad. Right, let's play a game. Mm. Simple.
Fair point.
I'll tell you why Rugby League is still struggling to market itself internationally. That's why.
Phil is holding up that photograph of Tony Adams. I mean, it's like a Renaissance picture, isn't it?
It's
perfect. The vending machine in the background.
Do you think they asked for
the two tables?
All the mobile phones, the school.
The quote in the background is the best. You put all of that, the vending machine, the tables, the tin pot chairs, the doors open with the fire extinguishers. The quote in the background, I failed time and time again. That is why I succeed. Michael Jordan.
What is the Jesus joke about when he goes for dinner? It's like, I need a table of, like there. There's a table for eight. Why? But there's only four of us. We want to sit next to each other. Tony Adams is no longer the president of the Rugby Football League.
Claire Balding.
Succeeding so. Tony Adams and before that.
I know this. Andy Burnham,
Mayor of Manchester.
Was it Andy Burnham?
Andy Burnham, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you see Andy Burnham singing Wonderwall?
No, I did not.
Well, he was launching a music initiative on stage, and it was something straight out of the thick of it. And the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, picked up a guitar, David Brent style, and started playing it. Then gave the guitar to an actual musician next to him, and the musician suggested Wonderwall, and basically, it's a little game. If you can get through 30 seconds of that, you're you're a better man than I am.
No, I won't be doing that. I even modestly like Andy Burnham.
Yeah.
I won't be doing that. So that is one thing Rugby League has right. Sorry, I'm going all over the place.
No, that's
here.
Right. Yeah.
Is celebrity, chair people
Not Chancellor. What are they called?
President.
President.
He might be president. Yeah. Yeah, as president.
Like
the
Lord Mayor.
Rugby Football League.
Yeah.
So we should have one for rugby, but God knows who they come up with because they're so worthy over it.
The commissioner. The league commissioner.
Well, the league commissioner would be a different role. Commissioner would be, I don't know, someone like Vince McMahon.
I would elevate Austin Healey to that role.
He would be awesome at league commissioner.
He'd be brilliant at league commissioner because
such a good shout.
Because what I love most about that man is, well, he's incredibly insightful, analytical, really understands the game. He doesn't care what anyone thinks of him.
Yeah.
I can see that being a future role for Courtney Laws. I can definitely see. And he looks like a commissioner too.
Mm. He does.
But the actual president has to be someone of standing outside of the game, I think.
Yeah.
Well, Phil's already, I think you've suggested in the past, like a Lord Miners or someone like that. One of the guys that did that.
Oh,
Saracen.
Yeah. Lord Miners would be good.
The Dyson. Yeah. Dyson report.
Yeah. There you go.
For that. We have got a bit of news knocking around. Probably the most notable is the world's most expensive rugby player.
Yeah. Cheslin Kolbe.
Oh, is he the most expensive rugby player in the world now?
Probably when you wrap in the fee that Toulon had to pay to release him from the last 2 years of his to lose contract.
Correct.
Wow. Is this what happened? So this is all new to me. I've not really kept pace with this story.
So he had 2 years remaining, I think 2 years, on his Toulouse deal. He has gone to Toulon for a reported £1 million a season, plus 1.5 million, or it might be €1 million, but not too much difference at the moment. Mm. £1.5 million to buy him out of the 2 years of his contract, which, when you consider, he will be unavailable to Toulon until Christmas because of his commitments with the Springboks. That is a very expensive contract for 6 months of...
I think we need to somewhat unpack this a little bit more, because this is a far bigger story than simply a player moving from club to club. Who can you think of in the Premiership who has been bought out of their contract? I can think of one player.
So there was the time that Johnny May and Ed Slater did a switch.
Yep.
Yeah.
With a little bit of money as a make weight.
But that was... That kind of booked the rule, wasn't it? Because there was some loophole or some clause that allowed you to buy out a contract exclusively for the remaining value of the contract.
Correct.
Something very similar to that has subsequently been closed or changed.
I'm sure if anyone's done it, Bath were the club that did it.
Cam Redpath.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they gave Sale six figures for a kid and probably... is worth every penny, from what I can tell.
Yeah, provided he can get his knees right. 100%, yeah. He's a very talented kid.
So
the other one was... I saw this very recently. Didn't Newcastle buy Twigamala? This is
I'm sure
I read that he was bought out of his Wigan deal by Newcastle Falcons the late 90s.
Well, then so did Solomona then, technically.
Well, no, because he retired. He officially retired from Cass, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then came out of retirement into a new sport.
So he did a Johan...
Nothing shady about that at all.
He did a Johan Usun.
No, no. So he retired, but then Sale offered to buy him out of his contract in line with previous examples of this.
And the two were not related at all. He retired age 24... and then just happened to fall into a rugby contract with Sale.
So this is the last thing I'll talk about rugby league. I don't even like it that much. I do like it, but not that much. I turned on Sky the other day, and who would be playing? But it was St. Helens.
Saint versus Warrington?
No, versus Cass.
Okay.
And it was a game from God knows how long ago, because it was Wilkin up against Denny.
Ah, okay.
And it was ace. And I was like...
Awesome.
So it took me a little while to look through. It's like, has John Wilkin been resigned? Because obviously he's not playing... Toronto anymore. And has Denny left Sale? Because I've not heard of him anymore. And it took me about a minute to realise, this is from 2000 and whatever it was. But yeah, cracking game.
Right.
So I wonder if this Chez and Colby deal is going to start a trend of buying players out. And even if it does start a trend of buying players out, is this the right player to buy out? And... well, why? It's a hell of a lot of money.
If this was in the Premiership, the buyout would count towards the salary cap.
Yes.
I'm assuming it doesn't work like that with France. Or else, in France, they have a club salary cap, so total wage costs, which include...
cleaners and
coaches,
whatnot.
Cleaners, chefs and stuff. So they might be able to balance stuff up. I think they have a total spend as well as a squad salary spend, don't they? I don't know.
Read about it in France in the past. I do know it's different, but they do have an effect. Well, they have a salary cap, but it is higher.
Right. So let's take Chez and Colby, right? Let's take him out of Toulon. Now, we all agree he's a very good player.
To say the least.
Yeah, he's top five wingers in the world.
Okay. Who does he play for in the Premiership, which makes him a title contender?
That weren't already a title contender.
Is Toulon a title contender? I don't think they are.
But so, if he goes to Exeter remain a title contender.
Yeah.
If he goes to Bristol remain a title.
Yep.
Sale, remain a title contender. Saracens, remain a title contender. Harlequins,
he could
he's
that good, he could turn 3 or 4 tight defeats into victories for teams over a season, which has a significant effect.
And yeah, maybe.
I mean, on the basis of that, like take Bath, for example, who finished 7th or 8th last season.
Mm.
They've got Anthony Watson, who is one of the, another one, in my opinion, one of the top five outside backs in the world. He's maybe not quite. He's maybe 98% of as good as Cheslin Kolbe. He knows that Bath team. He's never made as big a difference of that.
No, he hasn't.
It's hard to say.
I don't think Anthony Watson is 98% of Cheslin Kolbe.
Oh, I think
he is in lots of respects, but Cheslin Kolbe has done it time and again, and he did it in the Lions series, where he just does. He is capable of things which nobody else on the planet can do.
He's a modern day Shane Williams, isn't he? Because of the way he can defeat defenders, basically from a pick and go, literally from a pick and go. So he is an unusual talent. I've said this before, as an out and out winger, I think Mpimpi is probably as good, and you know, Anthony Watson is as good, but they are as good differently, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not directly comparable, but I think Anthony Watson is, I would put them both in the top five wingers in the world. You're arguing over at that level, it is fine margins.
So would you pay that amount of money for Anthony Watson?
I wouldn't pay that amount of money. I wouldn't pay the £1 million a year for Cheslin Kolbe. I certainly wouldn't pay it if I had to spend £1.5 million to buy him out of his existing contract.
Exactly. I can't see any logic to this whatsoever. No. I might pay that money for, I tell you who, for Owen Farrell.
Yeah.
Maybe for Dan Bigger.
Yeah.
Owen Farrell more so, because I think that's what it'd take to move him.
Richie Munger. Or Beauden Barrett.
Richie Munger, yeah.
Richie Munger probably more than Beauden Barrett because he's kicking so good.
Yeah. The salary cap is where this is most important, because looking at, say, Cristiano Ronaldo to Manchester United, the projections are something like he might have cost them £25 million in transfer fee, but they would anticipate £60 million worth of shirt sales off the back of his signing alone.
Yeah.
Now, I've read a bit about the shirt sales in the past. I would always take that with a pinch of salt. A lot of the shirt deals are structured in a way that the club will get a massive upfront payment for Adidas to make their shirts, for example, like the lovely one that I was wearing last week. And there are these huge targets for shirts that would have to be breached before the club see any additional revenue over and above that.
Interesting.
So people use a blunt tool of, a shirt is £100 or £50 to £100, depending on the shirt. 5% of that goes to the club, therefore you would need to sell X number of shirts.
0.1% of it goes to the child who made it.
Exactly, yeah. But it's not always the case with shirts. But Ronaldo and Messi, for example, the commercial impact will be astronomical for those clubs.
Yes, agreed. But the salary cap constrains you, and certainly if you were in the Premiership, there's no way you'd spend that amount of money on, frankly, any player.
No.
You could have one if your owners have got deeper. One or two.
Oh, with
because
a
marquee. Of the marquee. For example, Semi and Sir Charles for Bristol. And those are players who are worth close to that amount of money. But and there's a handful of them in the world who are worth
I would spend all that money on fly halves, locks and props. That's basically what I'd spend all of my money on.
And there's a lot of good,
like you say. You said Anthony Watson is 98% of Cheslin Kolbe. There's a lot of players for a lot less money that are 85% of Cheslin Kolbe.
Well, I was going to make that exact point. Look at Will Muir and Rory McConachy, who are picked up from England sevens.
No. The most egregious of the lot, Joe Cock and a singer. I mean, that is an egregious contract for a player who is reasonable, serviceable. And the other two are absolute dynamite.
And who's on more money?
Well, combined. Because I honestly think combined they will not be on as much as Joe Cockensinger.
Probably, yeah. Maybe McConachy now, because of his England, he's really good. But certainly his first deal and Will Muir's first deal will be, minuscule
peanuts.
for players who are 85% as good. So how do you structure your team is a key question.
Toulon, wow.
Toulon do some crackers things. It's one of the reasons why I've always got a soft spot for Toulon, just because beyond the team that won three back-to-back Heineken Cup trophies in about 13-15, something like that, 13-15, around then. That team was built in the right way, because it was, you had key players in key positions. You had an amazing pack.
Backy's Bota and
Backy's Carl Heyman.
The best
Chris Massoe.
I bet you don't name the
Fernandez Lobby.
Yeah, well, he was actually one of the best. He was
so good.
Fernandez Lobby.
Juan Smith.
Danny was a beast.
Danny Rousseau, Juan Smith.
So this is how you do it, in my humble opinion, if you want to win back-to-back European titles. And there's some evidence, of course, that Toulouse did something similar, is you effectively assemble an AC Milan-style team where you're just dishing out not huge money, but big money to old-timers, people who are about to retire. In the same way that Toulouse gave Trevor Brennan a contract for the last few years, or indeed more recently, hell's his name? Massive flanker. Absolute warrior.
Where? What club?
Chesney.
Toulouse.
Jerome Kano. Jerome Kano is a great example.
Yeah. So players between, say, 34 and 37 who are there. I mean, if you, who's the guy for Racing? Dominic?
Yeah.
Donica Ryan.
Donica Ryan.
Donica Ryan beats great people up for fun.
And he's about 38.
Yeah.
Great example.
Donica Ryan. And the last one I'll give you, also from Racing, not Michael Klassens, but Klassens, number 8. He was about 38 too.
Yeah.
So that's how you do it.
Yeah. And I've got a soft spot for Toulon because of the way they built that team. And obviously winning back-to-back-to-back is incredible. And having, because they had the, they had the pack, and then they had some all-time backs as well. So Wilkinson, Gitto, Habana, Drew Mitchell are some of the best backs to play the game in the last 20 years. best backs to play the game of all time. I'm just looking at the
They had Simon Shaw as well, didn't they, in the second row with...
Yes, they did.
They did for a period of time.
Who partnered Nick Kennedy.
Nick Kennedy. They had, obviously, Sheridan. Was there for a period.
Was Lee Halfpenny and Brian Habana there for their trophy wins?
I think
Halfpenny was after. Habana was definitely there for at least one of them.
But interestingly, Sheridan backed down with Avion Lewis-Roberts and Gethin Jenkins in his only stint outside of Wales.
Wow.
Yeah. But some of the decisions more recently for Toulon, like buying Julian Surveyor, basically releasing him from his contract after playing him a stint at 12... It seems like one of the examples of...
Their squad now is good, though, isn't it? My word. Etzebeth, Gross, Olivon, Parise, Saran, Issa.
Saran.
Yeah.
Carbonell's quality. He's a cheeky little chappy. Him and Baptiste Saran.
Cordan, Bellio.
Villiers as well.
He's good.
His quality.
And now, Colby.
Charles Olivon.
Yeah, what? He's a...
French captain.
He's awesome.
Parise's still got a few more years. Facundo Issa, handy player. Kieran Brooks, who's obviously gone.
Kieran Brooks there?
Kieran Brooks.
Yeah.
Love it.
Right, okay. So they are past European champions. You realise all three teams you're talking about today are also European champions.
In our Premiership review. So we've got Wasps, Bath and Leicester.
And before we get to those, any more news? Let's continue not to reference the story that we didn't reference last week.
No, because it seems to come to nothing.
Good. Well, the rugby paper were trying to make it something in one of their columns this week. But I'm glad it's not getting any traction, and let's hope it stays that way.
So there is something to mention. Just a question on Twitter from Rory O'Keefe, who said, "Just wondering if JB will ever play the intro to the pod on his trumpet."
Well, since I've got the Phyllis Mabel, I have packed in trumpet lessons for the time being until it gets dark again, because I just do not have the... I nearly dialed in today, boys. Now, you know that is fairly rare for me in my nine-year history. I nearly suggested dialing in so I could put on a coat of varnish. So, the answer is, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But not a no.
Oh, I will do it, but just not yet.
I appreciate that question, I do.
I've also got a little quiz that I prepared earlier today. It's not a big one, 6 questions.
Oh, excellent.
If you'd fancy.
Yeah.
Well, can we do a team, then a quiz?
All right.
Yeah.
Shall we do that?
Then we can tee it up. Perfect.
Very good.
So as we continue our build-up to the new Premiership season, which is the weekend of the 17th September, middle of September, the Hobby League begins at the end of September.
Oh, nice.
And the top 14 begins next weekend.
Of course.
Of course.
And when's the... do we know what's happening with Rugby Championship yet?
Yeah, it starts again. So it's going to be all the games in Queensland because there are low case rates. It's been permitted. I think New Zealand and Australia are already there. They play their next game next weekend.
No, any crowds?
Don't know.
Because they're like they're sort of macing 12-year-old girls and stuff in Australia, so I don't know if they're going to have crowds.
Don't know.
Do you hear about the dogs that they shot?
I know.
Oh, God.
Humans are strange things. Like, you know, they're locking people up for no good reason. They are depriving people of liberty. And no one really cares. You shoot some dogs and everything goes wild.
Yeah.
Absolutely wild.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Please continue.
So, New Zealand, Australia, who have played one game fewer, even though they had the two Bledisloe Cup games earlier, they are due to play next weekend. And then Argentina and South Africa arrived in Queensland, I think, the middle of last week. So they've got their quarantine, and then the following weekend they start playing again. So one game this weekend, and the following game it's kind of back to normal-ish games.
Yeah. Now, we were scathing about New Zealand last week. There's a few more bits and pieces about that as to why they decided to do what they did. And someone mentioned in reporting, it kind of went like this, which was they were trying to leverage their situation to play the game elsewhere for more money. But reading that particular article, I can't remember where I saw it now, it was very, very loosely linked to the fact that they were going with Silver Lake, and it didn't make any sense whatsoever. Here's what did make sense, so this is why I wanted to bring it up, was the reason they didn't want to leave is because once they did leave, they can't go back to the country until November.
Yeah, well, or they've got to have the two-week quarantine, and then go back out.
That's astonishing.
Yeah.
Like, so they actually, in my mind, had a little bit more of a point than we gave them credit for, because imagine leaving home now and not coming back until November. I mean, they've got 2 months away. And I think one of the big problems with professional sport, I see it a lot in cricket, player burnout, just been away from home for too mm-hmm. long. Cricketers are renowned for this. It's really difficult. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think they were right to abandon the game. And
certainly not to do it in the way they did it, where the Australian players found out they didn't actually let Rugby Australia know, or they were no part of the conversation.
It's not even that. I mean, surely there's some adults in the room somewhere in New Zealand that say, yeah, well, of course we'll let the rugby team back.
Well,
of course we will.
I was going to say, you can just blanket this with, in Australia and New Zealand, just as, you know, it's happening in other parts of the world as well. Some in parts of the world more so than others, but everywhere to some degree has gone insane.
Insane. Yeah, so anyway, that I thought was an important clarification. Yeah. They weren't allowed back into the country.
Yeah, that's fair.
You mentioned the Silver Lake deal. So that's, I think it's waiting on the players' union at the moment.
Yeah.
But that, the figures being talked about for that are incredible.
Well, they've just signed a big kit deal, haven't they? With Altrad.
Altrad.
Yeah.
Hang on. The engineering company.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, to put Altrad across the shirt?
Correct. Yes.
Oh, right. Not to engineer the shirt.
No.
What?
In the same way that Montpellier and
France.
Yeah, they're the primary sponsor for France.
Bloody hell.
But the figures being talked about are 270-ish US dollars for a 12.5%. Million US dollars, not 270-ish. 270 million US dollars for a 12.5% stake in the commercial rights of the All Blacks, which values it at over $2 billion.
In perpetuity, forever.
Yes. Yeah.
I'd need to look at it. I mean, that sounds phenomenal, but I'd need to look at it a little bit in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, those are the figures that are being pretty widely reported. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always the unintended consequences, like you say, the money now versus what you'll be saying 20 years from now, as we talked about with the Premiership, and I've forgotten who it was.
Well, imagine if you earned 12% of the Premier League from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You don't have to put any money into it. You've got no overheads. You just own 12% of the commercial revenue.
Just the upfront cost.
That's incredible.
So it sounds like a lot of money, but there's that. And then the players, as you said, and this is why they need to get the players to agree to it, because they didn't initially, because they said there's more than money at stake here. There's the identity, the tradition, and some things which actually make it such a valuable proposition that could be eroded with a deal like this.
Of course, the irony of the whole situation is it's the players' union who want more money, which are forcing the New Zealand union to make such a deal. So it's kind of like a circular firing squad.
Where were we?
Clubs.
So we did up to London Irish, who finished ninth last year, and in eighth place it was Wasps. So they won 9 out of 22 games last year, minus 85 points difference.
Martin Gleeson's going to England, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
So, okay, and Ian Costello's going to Munster.
That's right.
So they've lost two of their coaches. Lee Blackett remains, and I'm sure they'll supplement with some good quality coaches around. As for players coming and going, what's the big story there, Phil? You usually have the information to hand.
Of course.
Loads of players have gone.
Yeah, but it's a bit of offloading some high salaries, relatively low contributions.
Lima Sopawanga.
Sopawanga being one, Juan de Jong being another. Kieran Brooks going to Toulon. There is a loss there because he's an excellent tight end, but he'd be on decent money. Tommy Taylor going to Sale is a loss. Si McIntyre going to Sale is a loss. Will Rowlands went
to Dragons
is another loss. So they've lost a few players. They've not brought in an enormous amount. A couple of interesting ones. So Nizam Carr is coming back from South Africa.
Oh, I did not know that.
Francois Huha has come in from Worcester. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to see if he's on Lamborghini money still.
He's not.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought there'd be many people paying him what he was getting paid at Worcester. Ali Crossdale from Saracens.
Yes, good
highly
signing.
Rated, yes. Incredibly highly rated. Outside back / fly half.
Yeah, that's
as
exactly
I understand
what
he is. Went to Sedba, didn't he?
Yes, and I think he started off in St Ambrose for some reason. I think he's a local. Yes, I do. You know
I think
what?
He's wing primarily, isn't he?
He is now. Do you know where I think he played? Bowden. Mm. Bowden River Club. So
according to his Wikipedia page, which may well be wrong, so he did go to Sedba School, but he was born in Halifax. That doesn't mean anything. He could have just been born there and
can you name,
got the hell out.
Can you name another great fly half to be born in Halifax?
George Ford?
Nope. Might be here some time. European Cup.
Charlie.
Go on. Go on.
Play for Saracens and Sale.
Charlie Hodgson. Man of Halifax too. So here's my views on Wasps. I think they are phenomenally good at keeping core talent. And even when they are losing people who, I mean, you look at that list of names, you think, bloody hell. Yeah, Will Rowlands, big name. Kieran Brooks, big name. They've lost big names, but they've done this before. And I think they're very good at identifying the qualities in players which they require. Whether this be the way they identified Jacob Umunga to take over from Sapuanga, or in their signings, Kiparigi would be a great one. Watson Jr., or Senior, I think he is.
I think is the older.
But it's like they almost prioritise pace over everything else.
Josh Bassett from Bedford.
Yeah.
Great pickup.
They've also kept lads that they need to keep. Like Willis.
The two
Bodry.
Willises.
Can they get Christian Wade back?
Oh, it looks like he's doing all right at the moment.
At Buffalo Bills, really?
Yeah, he looks like he's going to... Well...
No, because they're good. Buffalo Bills are legit good now.
I'm sure I saw him score.
I know it because the Jets are in their conference.
Did they dream that he scored the conference. Other day? I'm sure he scored at...
Another one?
I'm pretty sure he did.
What? He played an actual down in a... In an action? No, we would have heard about that.
No, because it's pre-season
still. It's pre-season.
Oh, yeah, of course it is, sorry.
So I'm sure he's doing all right. Anyway, maybe.
Punt return, was it? Or
no.
Running back still?
Running back. Yeah. I might have dreamt this. I don't know what's going on. Anyway. So I think that they're very, very good. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same deal with the coaches. They did really well to pick up Martin Gleeson. Remember, Martin Gleeson... was playing literally first team rugby at Oral like 4 years ago, and they picked him up and he did great.
And Lee Blackett they picked up from Rotherham.
Yeah. Yep. So they know what they're doing. They operate on a fair, still quite a tight budget budget compared to the others. I don't think they will be top six, but I think they will do very, very well with the cards which they are dealt. That's my opinion.
I think they could make a run for the top six or even the top four if they get their injuries right.
Yeah, everyone has to be fit the whole season.
And guys like Jack Willis, who obviously had the horrendous knee injury for England last year, and Alfie Barbary, who's such an important player. At 20, he was such an important player, but he hardly played last year because of injuries. Which is not surprising. I think he had a couple, not surprising given just how physical he is and just how young he is.
Yeah.
Another couple that they kept, they're two young fly halves.
Atkinson and Umanga, yeah.
And Umanga, yeah. Which I think it's safe to say that Jimmy Gopeth at 55 years old or whatever he is now is probably finally, last season was finally the year that he'd
took a bit of a backseat. Or he goes to Toulon.
Or maybe he goes to Toulon. Yeah. But yeah, it'd be very interesting because I actually think that Charlie Atkinson might end up being the number one fly half of those two. I really like the way he plays.
Although, that said, if I'm building a team, I think Charlie Atkinson gives me a little bit more flexibility, so he'd be the one to move because I don't think Umanga is a 12, I don't think he's a 13. He's nothing but a 10.
He's a 10.
Is Manotsi still there?
Manotsi's still there.
Because I don't think they've quite... he hasn't played, he was injured quite a lot, but also they just haven't replaced Vili Leroux and then previously before that Sir Charles. They haven't...
And Kirtley Beale before that.
Kirtley Beale before that.
It's big shoes to fill. And Manotsi is not the same player as those three.
No.
Well, the other thing I'd point out about Wasps is not so much the injuries, because they actually rotated quite a lot. They did use a vast array of their players. Particularly when they got to the final... Now, let's just preface that with the fact that when they did rotate, they seemed to go against other teams that also rotated. And it was a strange Premiership season because they were trying to do...
made the final.
Yeah, they were just trying to close off the year. I think last year is probably a far better example of what Wasps are than the year before. That said, Wasps can still put up points and they seem to be a team that can run hot or cold. And when they're hot, they're really hot. But like last week, they're also a team that can be figured out. So if you know how to beat Wasps, you can give them one hell of a beating. And just look at what Sale Sharks did to them season before last. If you can figure them out, they're quite easy to beat. If you let them run riot and do Waspy type things, well, then you're in for a long old day.
I think some of that is getting the players on the pitch for Wasps who can turn over the ball. Because a lot of what they did the season when they were ultra successful was they had a really, really tough defence. They forced turnovers, and when they got turnovers, they had the outside backs to exploit it. And Bassett and Kibirigi had a field day on a number of games.
Yeah, Thomas Young and then Willis, and that breeds excitement in the D, and all of a sudden they're defending 5% harder, and then it just makes everything easier.
They're packing no mugs, like you say. When they're on the park, they're driving mauls really good. They got like Ben Harris I think he's a really good player in the front row as well. And Tom Cruise was awesome.
Gabriel Ogre was another young we've not mentioned, but he's another young one that they've kept hold of.
But like you say, they do not, because of exactly as you pointed out, JB, they're probably in the bottom three spending.
I'd say so.
In the Premiership, and I think they do really well with that as the backdrop. And they don't have the depth that other squads do.
Just one other player that I'll mention before we finish. So they brought in Vea Fafita, who's an All Black, who's a Hurricane, who's a very talented player. He's a big, strong boy, can play lock or back row. Most notable for... he scored a try in 2017, I think it was, against Argentina.
Gassed it from about 40 metres.
So I watched that try back, just inside Argentina's half, gets the ball. He's against a winger, kind of half handoff, and then gasses around the outside of this winger. I look back and I was like, I'm sure that's Santiago Cordero.
Was it?
Check the team sheet. Santiago Cordero. He gassed Santiago Cordero to score in the corner.
Yeah. That's a Waspy type of lot.
It is.
Because, of course, I really like Tim Cardill from last year. I thought he's really good.
Did they not sign Elliot Stook as well?
Elliot Stook does come in as well.
Yeah, okay, cool. So he's like the Launchbury backup.
Of course, it's still a Launchbury.
Launchbury, yeah. Get him and keep him fit. I mean, he's unlikely to be scoring 50-yard tries.
And the other guy that they've still got, who I'm not a massive fan of, but you know, I can see he could be useful on occasions, Brad Shields.
Brad Shields, another Hurricane.
Yeah. How interesting. Yeah, so, like I say, I don't think they'll be top six, but I think they'll do all right, and I think they'll have a couple of tremendous games.
If they get on that run, like you said, the previous season they got on good winning run, last season they got on a bad losing run. If they start well, like someone like Fekitoa, who was injured for a lot of the last couple of seasons, but when he plays, he's just so good. It's like a sledgehammer.
Yeah, the Hitman.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he is excellent.
So yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic with Wasps. I think they'll be pushing for that top six, and could even with the right combination push for the top four.
I'd if I had to put one number on it, I'd go seventh.
Yes.
Right. Should we do a little quiz?
No, yeah, go on, Phil.
Quiz.
Yeah, it's six questions. Have you got pen and paper? Have we got any? There's loads of paper I can see there.
No, they're technical drawings of boats.
I can write it on my phone.
You can write.
I've got 11% left, but that should be enough to beat Tim.
And six questions.
I've got 10% left.
Oh, wow.
Whose phone dies first? Okay, question number one.
Yeah.
Which World Cup winning second row captained Ulster between 2010 and 2014?
Easy.
Say again.
Next.
Which World Cup winning second row captained
second row
Ulster between 2010
Argentine
and 2014? Question number two.
Okay.
3 points available. Which teams did New Zealand beat in the knockout stages of the 2015 Rugby World Cup? So 3 points, they beat three teams after the group stage.
Oh, you want them all?
So 1 point for each. So 3 points available.
Including the final?
Yeah, including the final.
I can't remember.
So you all remember the final, obviously.
I remember the final. Actually, I do. Yeah, of course I remember the final. Total guess. Wow.
Okay, question number three.
What? Wait. Who did... okay, fine. Go on.
Question number three. What percentage stake did CVC buy in Premier Rugby Limited?
Oh, this will be embarrassing if I get this wrong.
In December 2018.
Okay.
Or it was announced by CVC in December 2018, shortly thereafter. And so I've clarified, because there was some speculation at the time. So I found an article where Nick Clary, who's a managing partner of CVC, confirmed the percentage stake they bought. Question number four.
I'm not going to do very well at this one.
You should get a couple of points of it on this. So there's 3 points available. Question number four. Who started in the back three, the two wing positions and fullback, for Harlequins when they won the Premiership final in 2012?
Right, okay. I have no idea. Oh.
I think that's the easiest question of the whole thing.
Okay.
I've definitely got two.
I got two of them.
Question number five. What team are George Chris and Hadley Parks playing for in Japan? Slightly tougher.
Do we get a mark for the brand?
No.
I just made something up. Okay.
I need the full tea. If you get it slightly wrong, I won't be too pedantic. But
the Hayabusa Eagle Jets.
Exactly. Final question. And so there's negative marking in this final question.
Uh-oh.
So there are 9 points available in the first five questions with the couple of threes. And on the final one, I want you to tell me how heavy Sam Simmons is in kilos,
Jesus,
according to his official Lions profile.
Okay.
And then you get If you get it right, you get 1 point. If you get it wrong, you get minus 1 point for every kilo that you are out
wow.
of the correct answer.
Okay.
So.
Hey. Oh, God. I'm really struggling with this. Okay.
Okay, let me just do that little formula.
This CVC one's bugging okay. me. Really bugging me.
Right, first question. Who captained, which was the World Cup winning lock, who captained Ulster, Tim?
It was. Have you got it written down? It was
yeah.
the South African 2007 World Cup winner, Johan Muller.
Yeah,
correct. Johan Muller. 1 point each. Question number two. Which teams did New Zealand beat in the knockout stages of 2015?
Well,
the final was
Australia.
Yep.
JB. Then semi-final was
I seem to remember France going down hard.
Tim? I've written down France.
France, yeah.
So the last one, Wales obviously beat England.
Mm.
Oh, they were in a group with Australia. So they'd have gone to the other side of the draw. But the question is, did they lose to France? Sorry, did they lose to New Zealand? Oh, I have no idea. I'm going to say they did.
So you've got Wales. Oh, who have you got no. on
I couldn't remember. I just guessed Ireland because I knew they always lose in quarterfinals. So I thought, there you go, there's one in four shot.
So you're both wrong. It was South Africa.
Damn
in
it.
The semi-final. South Africa, after losing to Japan, only lost by 2 points to the All Blacks in the semi-final.
Really?
18-20. Yeah.
Oh wow. So we both get two.
Both get two. So you're both on three in total.
Okay.
Question number three. What percentage stake did CVC buy in PRL?
In my mind, it's always a third, but it's not a third. I think it's like 27% or 28%.
Oh, I think you're right. I
so
guess,
what have you got?
I wrote 13%.
13 and
27 on
I think that sounds right.
27 is correct.
Yes!
As soon as you said it, I went, yes, that's it.
The 13, I think it was 14 and a half that they bought in the Six Nations.
Right. Okay.
I think it was something, but yeah, the 13 was broadly right for the Six Nations, whereas Pro 14 and Premier were both about 27.
JB's in the lead.
So the back three for Quinns in 2012.
I've got them written down, you can see, so JB can say them.
So Brown, yeah.
Hugo.
Yeah.
Last one is difficult. I'm calling him Saki.
Two out of three. Tim, do you want to fill in the details?
As you can see, Phil, I've written Hugo Monier, Mike Brown, and Tom Williams.
Oh, well done.
Correct.
Well that puts done. Us even.
Six all. So what team did George Cruz and Hadley Parks play for in Japan?
Green Rockets.
I've written Toyota Blitz Eagles.
0-0. They play for the Panasonic Wild Knights.
Oh, right, there. Of course. Don't even know if Green Rockets are a team.
And
so it's all down to Sam Simmons.
It is. And the negative marking as well. So you're both on six, so you can afford to be 5 kilos out and still have a positive score.
104 for me.
104.
I've got a feeling it's 98, though.
I've written 97 kg.
He's going to be 98, isn't he? I know he is.
So I can tell you. Come on, let me just put this little formula in to link to that. So
in my mind, he's 98, but I've just inflated it a bit because there's no way you put because Exeter have got what's his name, Henry Slade at 6'4".
So this is the British and Irish Lions. Oh, so no. I can tell you on his Exeter profile. He is 103 kgs. I can also tell you that Tim finishes on minus 1 point.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So Tim with 97 was 7 kg out.
Oh, well,
so he's either 104 or 90 or 90. He can't be 90 kgs.
He can't be 90 kgs.
So I can tell you that the winner of this week's quiz is Tim Cocker.
What? Sam Simmons, 90 kilograms.
JB gets minus 8, finishes on minus 8 points with minus 14 for question number 6 because here is Sam Simmons' British and Irish Lions profile.
That is
clear. There he is, age 26, England 7 caps, club Exeter Chiefs, Weight 90 kg.
Right. I am in Exeter on Friday. I'm playing the Ben Moon testimonial. I'm going to personally weigh Sam Simmons. You think I'm joking? I'm going to get a scale and I'll weigh him.
Take one of those big, like, fish scales you take for big, massive carp, lie him down in it.
Yeah,
pick
look,
him up.
Look. 104. That is nonsense.
90 kg.
90 kg.
That's.
So, congratulations,
that's like,
Tim.
That's like 13 stone 12 yeah, or something, isn't it?
Enjoy it, Tim. Holy victory.
He's never 90 kg.
So that's like 2 stone less than his actual weight.
his extra listed weight.
Did they weigh them after like a team building exercise where they weren't allowed to drink any water in the jungle for 7 days? That's a travesty, that.
No, it meant you won, Tim. So
well,
congratulations.
Yeah, no, great. I loved it. Brilliant. Yeah, he is definitely 90 yeah. kg.
Whatever.
Wow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Did not see that coming. How did you only just spot that?
I was looking up for one of the quizzes. I was trying to do one of the quizzes. For this quiz, I was trying to do whose official weight is heavier of Ardy Surveyor, Sam Simmons, and Michael Hooper. But neither Waratahs or... Rugby Australia seem to have a profile for Michael Hooper that gives his weight. And I was looking at aiming for their England or their international profiles. Sam Simmons doesn't currently have an England profile because he's not been part of a squad for so long. So I went to his British and Irish Lions. I was like, ignore the Ardy Surveyor, Michael Hooper thing. That's the real story. That's the real focal point of the quiz.
Wow.
So I'm trying to build a quiz at the moment, and I don't know how it's going to go. It's not for... I quite like this as a concept, but it's quite hard to pull off, right? I've tried to run it on a WhatsApp group of ours, but there weren't enough players. But the idea is, places I think sound like places... but are actually something completely different. So do you know what these places are? So I don't know how I'm going to question it. How I'm going to phrase the question, like, what have these locations, what have these things got in common? But Africa, Bombita.
Okay.
Bronx. Black Moon. Chebrock. City Morgue. French Montana. Meek Hill. Quaidka. Sleepy Hollow. Young Haiti.
Meek Hill is a rapper.
French Montana.
Or is he an actor or something?
He's a rapper.
Oh, so it's like rapper or American town, is that?
Basically, yeah. Basically, a real place or a rapper. And obviously Bronx is both. I love French Montana. French Montana sounds like it's just outside of, I don't know, New Zealand somewhere, like...
like New Caledonia.
Exactly. Where do you grow up? Oh, French Montana.
What were some of the other ones again?
Chebrock. Famous for its salmon fishing. City Morgue.
City Morgue. He's a rapper.
Yep, these are all rappers. So I want a rapper day space. I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do with them yet. I'm going to fashion them into a quiz.
Rap or map?
Rap
nice.
Or map. Love
I
that.
Like it.
But hang on. No, but looking up rappers with names that sound like places is easy. Finding places that should sound like rappers...
that might be slightly more difficult.
Any City Morgue, I mean... Village Cemetery? Yeah, there could be a few, I guess.
Yeah.
Gun Range?
There you go. At JB Moore on Twitter. Let him know if there's any places that sound like they could legitimately be rappers. Let him know.
Okay.
Good. Great quiz. And by the way, as I mentioned, we have had some fantastic quizzes emailed to contactheadchasers@gmail.com. We will get to those on the upcoming podcasts. I haven't forgotten about you. The people that have sent them through, some really good ones. So don't you two peek at those. I'll be quizmaster on those.
A team.
Yes.
In seventh place in the Premiership last year was Bath.
Every single team so far I have been, I would say, relatively kind on. You guys can start with Bath.
So the ins and outs.
Yeah, we'll just do some facts. So they've brought in very few people. They brought in a South African prop from Ealing and a Scottish prop from Glasgow, and then a few academy boys. They've let go of the most noticeable, didn't let him go, but Zach Mercer left. They've lost a couple of props in Jamie Batty and Christian Judge. Chudders has gone to Worcester. Priestland has gone back to Wales. Elliot Stuke, we mentioned before, gone to Wasps. Jack Walker has gone to Quins.
Yeah.
Jack Walker's always highly rated, but never enormously shown it. Mm. And Henry Thomas has gone to Montpellier. So they've lost. They've definitely lost more players than have come in. They've got David Williams, former Bath coach, former London Irish coach, who's been coaching in South Africa. He's a South African, but coaching in South Africa and Japan for the last few years. He was at Bath between about 12 and 14, 11 and 14, something like that. Has come back in to work, obviously, alongside Neil Hatley, who was formerly Bath in roughly the same period, former coach. They have kept, other than Zach Mercer, they've kept a lot of the very talented but expensive and often unavailable players. They've also brought in, who's not on that list, but obviously came in last season, but didn't play last season, Danny Cipriani, to be the key man, the cornerstone of, well, everything, because that's how Cipriani plays. It's the only way he can possibly play.
Yeah.
Which for me feels like a bit of a gamble.
Yeah, a lot of the money that they've got tied up in guys like, as you talked about earlier, Anthony Watson and Jonathan Joseph and Cam Redpath, that you talked about.
Talupe Faletau,
Joe Thokonasinghe, McConaughey and Muir, and all these very talented guys. Their backline undoubtedly is potentially exceptional, that we just didn't see any of it, did we?
Well, we did. They were rubbish. I mean, we did see it. We really did. And yeah, there are lots of reasons for them being rubbish, but as a team, they are practically useless.
relative to the...
Yeah, I mean, they'd be good at level 8.
Relative to the squad. Relative to the squad they have, you mean?
Yeah.
Because they finished 7th.
Finished 7th, won 10 from 22.
So I just don't think that's a reasonable return.
Because the context is the players that they have.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So they don't get the best out of the players. Now, having said that, the list of names that you've read off who are leaving, I don't see that as a downside. I actually think it's really positive for Bath to be promoting academy players into that squad, because there is a breadth of knowledge, there's breadth of experience. I think that is exactly the sort of squad where you can bring academy lads into and for them to be pretty good. In fact, it's exactly the sort of squad.
A lot of their star guys, big money guys, have been around and done it.
Yeah.
They are experienced guys and should provide leadership. So like guys like Faletau and Underhill and Ewells, Cipriani, Ben Spencer played in World Cup final, Jonathan Joseph, Matavesi. Less so Redpath because he's so young, but Anthony Watson, McConaughey, Rocco Degouni's still there. He's been in and about England squad. So you've got a lot of guys who are in the right kind of age profile and experience profile.
One of the strange things about Bath, though, is even though I've just said semi-nice things about their playing squad, almost always the people that show up and perform for them are not their big money signings. They're people like Josh Bayliss. They're people like Reed. I guess I wouldn't put Cam Redpath in as a big money signing, although I guess it kind of is. He's a big name. He's not a big money guy. Those Tom Dunn is another one who performs really, really well for them. So three of those guys have come from the academy, and the fourth has been pinched from someone else's academy.
By contrast to Wasps, they always seem to have endless numbers of players.
Yes.
Yeah.
Almost to a detriment, you wonder sometimes, because you get decent players who don't get a lot of game time.
Yeah.
And well, Jack Walker's a prime example.
Jack Walker's a great example. And also, they have a lot of players that seem to just emerge and do really well. Will Muir, McConaughey are two, which we mentioned earlier on. I tell you another one that I really like there is Max. Is it Max Clark?
So there is Max Clark and Max Wright. They're two centres. Max Clark is longer hair.
And you've got De Glanville.
De Glanville's very good, as is Ajomo. Ajomo is Ajomo. Magic. Max. Absolutely magic.
It just feels great having those two names in Bath shirts as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. So, and again, more guys have come up, you know, from youth team or whatever you want to call them, academy, and they're making a name for themselves. I don't know. The weird thing about Bath is that even though I think they are not very good, and I also think their director of rugby is out of his depth and he should have gone elsewhere before taking the top job at Bath, despite all of that and them losing so many games, I've never heard a Bath player say anything bad about Bath. Never. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying on the record, I'm not saying in the media, just when you talk to them, they never say anything bad about their situation. Now, you can usually get some tidbits out of players, like maybe they're not happy about this or not happy about that. But in Bath, they seem to be all absolutely committed to the cause. It's very strange, because from an outsider's point of view, I think it's an absolute car crash, but you can't really make heads or tails of what
it's all. You've mentioned that Sippers is a risk. That is going to the casino and putting all your chips on red or black, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. You could get the absolute best from Sippers.
Now the Sippers,
and that would be awesome.
The Sippers,
I'd love to see it.
Is fascinating. Okay, because when you listen to Stuart Hooper talk, you basically have a handbook of platitudes, like a bingo machine full of Chinese fortune cookies. That's how he talks.
So honestly, it's so funny you said that, because I've watched Bath Rugby have put out a few videos recently of their kind of pre-season, and there's one where the focus was more on David Williams, the new returning attack and backs coach, and one was with Neil Hatley. And they said a lot of positive words that didn't really mean anything. Just talked like just vague but generic platitudes about how kind of every team wants to play the game.
What?
I didn't learn anything about what they are going to bring or do differently.
So I blame this on Stuart Hooper. I know this sounds it sounds ridiculously harsh, right? But when you've got a guy who behaves like Stuart Hooper, or no, not behaves like him, that's not a negative, but when the head man behaves in a certain way, you would expect the players around them and the staff around them, in order to progress, need to kind of ape his behaviour. So Sale Sharks under Steve Diamond liked hard men, because Steve Diamond's a hard man. You know, they like really aggressive physical players, because that's how he liked to play his rugby. Well, when you got Hooper in charge, actually that is kind of how he liked to play his rugby, but now he's moved into management, he likes to talk in management speak, and that is why you get these airy, empty phrases over and over again. Like, yeah, we just want to knuckle down and really work hard, and working hard for the boys, and the boys working hard. And
take our learnings.
Yeah, take our learnings, learnings for the boys, and working hard for the boys, and the boys. Right? So it just goes on and on and on. And I think it all comes from the top, because if you threw Steve Diamond in there, for instance, or Richard Cockerell, I bet they'd stop talking like that tomorrow. So the Sippers thing. With all that chat going on, you know, we just want good people, and we're going to build, you know, there is an element of that which is genuine. And you can see this because we just listed off loads of academy lads. It's really quite genuine. But then they throw it all out of the window by bringing Sippers in.
Well, or potentially, but now Sippers has found, what are those people again that helped?
Mental Mind. What are they called?
The Save Your World.
Save Your World.
Now Sippers has found Save Your World. Maybe he'll be on board with all that.
Well, he's a complex character, to put it mildly.
I mean, I can imagine, based on some of the like Instagram stuff, I can imagine Sippers in his house has probably got a picture of of a jetty going out into a still lake with a motivational quote under it.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I can't see that these things work. I mean, if you're wired in a certain way, you're wired in a certain way. And, you know, if you're trying yoga, but you're deeply angry inside about how rubbish your team are playing, eventually it's going to erupt out into the open. I can't see Save World or anyone else for that matter changing what Danny Cipriani is, which is a mercurial talent his day.
He actually does have the quality of player outside him where he's not going to get frustrated that people can't do the things that he can do because a lot of them can.
But like Gloucester would equally as good. Like, I don't see that. I mean, I don't see where they get a Mark Atkinson from or a back three with that sort of dynamite. Well, maybe. I mean, I just don't think they're that much better or worse.
Redpath, Joseph, Watson, De Glanville.
Yeah. It's true. And one of the things I was wrong about on Cipriani was he would stifle the creativity of some of the other players around. That is not true. He brings people into games. Now, he brings them into games in a very specified way, a way that you can target. And I think one of the problems with Gloucester under Cipriani, you could watch them and you know exactly what they're going to do. And Mark Atkinson's going to come to first receiver, or they're going to run some sort of pattern, or worst of all is when you see that pod of three forwards plodding up. Like, it sort of saps away the forward running game.
But that is exactly how Bath played. But then when they got the ball to Reece Priestland, he wasn't able to unlock the gaps that existed outside.
Because Reece Priestland is terrified of the gain line. Like, absolutely petrified. So that will be a massive improvement. I don't know. I honestly don't know how this all pans out. I know how I hope it pans out.
I do put a number on it.
Anywhere between first and eighth.
Fifth.
See, I'm thinking lower. I'm thinking they will struggle. I've got more hope that Wasps will make top six than Bath.
I wish I had your confidence. I can't get over Danny Cipriani. I think they're going to be fickle. That's what I think they're going to be. I think they're going to buckle really, really early doors. And it's do we know what the fixtures are? Who have they got first up?
They will be available. Let's have a quick
hopefully
look.
Bristol again. Bath-Bristol first.
Bath-Bristol would be ace. Bath-Exeter would be ace. Bath getting a pounding by Exeter pretty much ends their season.
First game.
Go on.
Nice, easy one. They travel up to the AJ Bell.
Oh, do they?
They do.
Oh, Sale will give them a good pasting.
And then they host Falcons at home.
Yeah, so the Falcons, for me, was the killer of their season last year.
Yeah, that was at... was it at the Rec or was it up there?
It was at the Rec.
Yeah.
They score an incredible try. I think, oh my God, these guys are world beaters. And then Gary Graham and co. just continually
grind.
And it wasn't even particularly close. In the end, they had no fire. They just had nothing. That said, when they came up to the AJ Bell, they were superb. But I'm pretty sure that Sale will put them to sword.
Third week they play Bristol away, and then fourth week. I was just looking for them. I was like, they're not on the fourth week. Of course, every team has a bye week.
Yeah.
And then they host Saracens.
Interesting. Yeah.
I was told.
So their first four games. Yeah.
I was told by Bath that my questioning towards Stuart Hooper was too aggressive. And if I ask him questions again like that, I might not be able to go to presses effectively. So, yes.
What were you asking him?
I asked him if he thought that his job was under pressure now that he'd lost more than he'd won. I don't think that's an unreasonable question. So, there you go. I'm somewhere between eighth and first. I can see them having a storming season. I can also see them being terrible.
That's why I'm hedging bets and going fifth. But I'm with Phil. I could see them being eighth.
What is a successful season for them, realistically?
Top four.
That's what they'll be targeting.
Top two?
Top four.
I think they'd be happy with top four. That's what they took. Because you've got to look. Rome wasn't built in a day. They finished seventh last year.
Yeah, and it's not like Gloucester 7th. And what I mean by that is Gloucester lost a lot of games very narrowly. You know, when they lost, they really imploded. So
when we talked about Wasps, we didn't mention Doggers, by the way.
Oh, no, we didn't.
Another player who was injured a lot.
Yeah.
Fekitoa and Doggers, they could have the most explosive centre pairing in the league. Actually, do you know what?
Lower than Exeter. Lower than Bristol.
I think they could end up roughly where they are now.
Yeah, I think they might.
Leicester are going to be getting better.
Leicester are going to be ace.
Leicester are going to be better, definitely. Be ace,
and that's who definitely. We're talking about. The third of the.
Hang on, just to round off Bath. Worse than Saracens. No, below Saracens. Below Exeter.
Yeah.
Below.
Bristol.
Below Sale.
Yeah. Below Quins.
Maybe.
I think they will be.
I think Irish finish ahead of them.
Irish ahead of Bath.
Yeah.
I've gotten
seventh.
I think eighth, but I also wonder if Irish will finish below eighth.
Interesting. Let's talk about Leicester then.
Leicester and their new captain announced this week.
Yes.
Who is their captain?
Ellis Genge.
Genji.
Wow, that's a statement of intent.
It is, and it's not really what you would expect as a Borthwick move. It's quite different.
Yeah.
But I like it.
Who would I think Borthwick would have picked? A second row.
tall second row who loves talking line outs.
Yeah. George Martin.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when I watch Stuart Hooper talk, I see a sort of a falseness or someone impersonating a DOR, doing a DOR impression, right? When I listen to Borthwick talk, I am 100% sold. Like, outside of maybe Sanderson and Baxter, outside of Baxter, I think that Borthwick is the real deal. I really do.
And Mark McCall.
I can tell you, having stood opposite him, I can tell you Borthwick does his homework so he controls his narrative 100%.
What do you mean?
I can tell that he has messages that he wants to get out to the world.
Yeah. Ah.
So I don't think he cares much for the media. He cares much for it all. But when he does it, it's like he's gone very much, actually, when you think about, like, Stuart Hooper has incredible business acumen, apparently, and was thinking about getting into executive coaching, that type of thing.
God, no.
Anyway, point being, Steve Borthwick actually, probably without thinking about it, does that because he's going, right, well, I've got to do this media thing. I probably wouldn't choose to do it if I didn't have to, but since I'm doing it, I'm going to make sure the points that I want to get out and the story that I want to tell is what's going to come out, because whatever questions you ask him, he will get it back to 2, maybe 3 points, and everything in any interview he does comes back to the 2 or 3 points that he wants to say.
So people who I talk to say they find him quite boring. I find him utterly compelling because I guess I don't really want a headline as such. I want to know about the rugby. And he tells you about the rugby, which I love. He breaks it down into real simplistic ways. Steve Diamond used to do this thing, right, where he would used to say to the press, oh, we play really expansive rugby because we need to, because we're in a football area, and if we need to attract people. And that was his message, like, we are playing attractive rugby. Steve Borthwick says something completely different. He says, you know, this is what we concentrate on. Defence, set piece, and breakdown. Like, that is almost the recipe for anti-rugby in a lot of ways. But he'll tell you why he does it. He tells you basically everything you want from a rugby perspective. And I love that. I absolutely love it.
When he comes to chat to the media, say a pre-game chat, he knows exactly how many of his squad are under 23, for example, how many of them are internationals. He knows all of that and just reels it off.
Yeah.
And he's quite impressive from that point of view. Like I say, he will not give you headlines. He will not give you the little 15-second soundbite that's going to go viral on Twitter, because he's not going to let that happen.
Yeah, I'm really quite sold on Steve Borthwick as a director of rugby. And on top of that, considering he's never played for Leicester, he feels very Leicester-y.
He's of the mould.
You have to keep reminding yourself that he's not a Leicester lad.
So Leicester Tigers ins and outs. It's certainly smaller than it's been for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
Fewer players out and in. Of those going out, no huge losses. Lavanini, maybe the biggest name. Zach Henry and Johnny McPhillips, kind of the backup tens, have both gone. A few other guys, but no one really worthy of note. Coming in, so not enormous numbers. Marco van Staden, who played for South Africa very recently.
They love this guy.
Lions.
They should do.
Comes in, who's big, strong boy, plays back row.
Does you mind you a little bit of Sean O'Brien?
Little bit, actually, in his stature. Yeah. Because he's a big, strong boy, but slightly lower centre of gravity, wide hips. Yeah.
Now, people have been asking me, who is the Leicester back row that we keep on referring to them signing? It was Van Staden. So
Van Staden.
That's the one.
Yeah. Freddie Burns.
Yep.
Obviously comes back, losing a couple of fly halves. Burnsy comes back in. Cicino. Juan Pablo Cicino comes in as an option, a very solid option in the centre.
Again, it sounds like a little bit of a retread of what they did with Matt Scott there.
In what way?
Well, they're both, in my mind, very powerful inside centres with a good range of skills. They're far better than average, but they can't seem to nail down a club.
He's a backup. He's a backup, as he was for Saracens.
Yeah, I know what you mean. He is. I think he will be. He's a backup, but he's a good player. He's a bloody good backup to have in. They've gotten Bryce Hegarty, who's most recently Queensland Reds, who is a 10/ fullback, who will cover those positions. And then they've promoted a load of lads from the academy, including obvious guys that played a lot last year, like Dan Kelly, George Martin, Jack Van Portfleet, and Freddie Stewart. We've all come up, so
and Harry Potter.
That's some talent. Is Harry Potter?
He's an Aussie, isn't he?
Academy. No, Harry Potter's from the academy.
I thought he was an Aussie.
Oh, maybe he is. Then maybe I got that horribly wrong. I'm sure he came from the academy.
So he's born in Wimbledon, but he was playing his rugby in New South Wales and Melbourne.
So
he came from Melbourne Rebels.
How old is he?
He went to Sydney University.
I bet he's like 28 or something.
He's 23.
Okay, fine.
But so, I think Leicester are going to have... I think they could sneak top four because George Ford will play more games than he has done.
Yes.
Yeah.
George Ford.
And that's massive.
Now, let's just talk about... There's one signing you've missed out.
So this week signed Gareth Evans, former Gloucester.
Short-term.
A short-term deal.
Okay, yes.
Another signing that I've missed is Hosea Saumaki. He's a Tongan outside back.
Well, Japan Tongan outside back. So, allegedly with this fella, he had a choice between Tonga and Japan. And he chose Tonga because he can get a work permit. Hooray!
Yes.
He's awesome. He's meant to be one of the best trainers who recommended him? Someone who's already there has recommended him. And says the man is a beast. He just trains all day long.
Good. Fantasy rugby draft noted.
So
damn it!
Yeah. So he is 6'3", 106 kgs. Leicester played a warm-up game against Jersey, over in Jersey, in front of 1,700 people this weekend.
Yeah.
Which looked pretty awesome, although it was, from the scoreline, pretty dull affair. He only ran in one of the tries, but... He looked pretty impressive gliding down the wing.
Have a look at some of his highlights.
Him and Dodono, that's a couple of big old boys.
Yeah.
Well, they can field like half a dozen back three players who are over 100 kg. Because you've got Jacobus van Wyk, you've got Murray Marivalu, you've got Freddie Stewart, who is over 105 kg because he's 6'5".
Yeah.
They've got some enormous guys, but they've also got pretty impressive skill sets as well.
Okay, you've still missed a signing.
Okay.
Kevin Sinfield.
Sinfield.
So he's the straw that stirs the drink, so to speak. He's going to be adding the magic rugby league touch to the attack. Don't know if he is or not, but this is the idea. Much in the same way that Sale lean heavily upon Paul Deacon and have done for years.
Gleeson going to England.
Yeah, this is why Cipriani plays the way he does, because Deacon taught him everything. There's loads of examples of rugby league attacks doing good stuff in rugby union.
And in terms of mentality, and we've been fortunate enough to spend some time with Kevin Sinfield on a Canterbury day back in the day. And in terms of mentality, the strength of character of Steve Borthwick and Kevin Sinfield together is pretty formidable, isn't it? Yeah.
Absolute integrity across the board there.
And intensity.
Now, I'm not saying the man he replaced did not have integrity, but this is where I was going to go next with George Ford. My conspiracy theory was, I wonder how happy George Ford actually is. Because, of course, Ford Sr. was let go. And we know what happened in the past when, you know, a similar thing has occurred. On Sinfield, I'm pretty sure that Ford and Sinfield are literally neighbours in Saddleworth somewhere.
Because they're both Oldham boys, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm sure they drink in the same pub in Saddleworth. literally, I'm sure. I'm sure of it. So that might be awkward. But, yeah, I think it's a good signing. He's very... Mike Ford did an apprenticeship, basically, in rugby union to make sure he was ready for when he got a big job. No such thing with Kevin Sinfield.
He did play a bit.
Yes, you're
He played at the end of his career.
For 6 months at Fly Half for Leeds Carnegie.
Correct.
Yeah, you're right.
Which will accelerate his knowledge, because obviously coaching gigs, if you're at the top end of rugby union, are far more lucrative than coaching gigs in rugby league.
Yeah. Well, I think regardless, I think he's going to be good.
So Leicester Tigers,
I think they, along with last year's top four, are in the hunt for top four.
Plus Saracens.
So there's your top six.
Six in the yeah.
I can see them making top four. I really can. Although, my criticism of them is maybe they just don't quite have enough in the pack yet. They have signed a second row. Did you mention the second row that they've got?
Snyman.
Yes, could well be.
Ellie Snyman, who came in from Benetton.
Maybe not then. I thought this guy came from either Bulls or Sharks.
He has also played for the Bulls.
Yeah, it'll be him then. Apparently he is phenomenal in the lineup. Phenomenal. I'll leave it there. Maybe they just don't have enough grunt up front still. That would be my thought.
Maybe the front row. Maybe. Because you've still got the two old war horses in Tommy Youngs and Dan Coles.
Yeah, that can't last forever, can it?
It can't. Yeah, that.
And you might have said it stopped lasting about 2 years ago.
Yeah, maybe that feels a bit light. But everywhere else across the team, you'd say they've got competition.
They're massive and hard.
Just not made me laugh before. When Phil was listing the size of the back three. Now, when we first started doing the podcast, so 8 years ago. Yeah, so I'm going to say 6 years ago, right? I got a tip to pick up. Oh, actually, no, first season of Fantasy Rugby Draft. Pick up Dom Barrow was a tip. And the reason was, apparently, under Major, they wanted to put the 2 second rows in their formation out wide when they got into the 5 meter, into the opposition five, I was going to say enemy 5 meter, the opposition 5 meter for crossfield kicks, and also crossfield kicks from penalties, so they could jump up in the air and catch it.
Yeah.
Came to nothing.
Yeah.
Are you going to go with your gut instinct on Fantasy Rugby Draft this year, or are you going to...
I have a foolproof strategy as normal. Don't need to worry about my Fantasy Rugby Draft. It'll be tight.
13 sale players.
You had AJ McGinty available on your first pick, and you swerved him.
I bottled it.
And I picked him up on round 5.
What did he end up with in the end?
Oh, massive points.
He was one of the top point scorers, wasn't he?
An actual real-life hero.
Yeah. Really is.
So, right. Yeah, we're all convinced that Leicester will definitely make top 6.
Definitely top six, pushing top 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, that. Yeah. I think if you want to know where Leicester are at, we're going to see a better version of Leicester than the team that nearly beat Bristol, and we know how good. Bit of Dean Ryan logic here, but I think we're going to see a Leicester team which can deal with teams like Bristol.
The only caveat I would have is if George Ford earns the right to continue wearing the England 10 shirt, or Eddie Jones carries on being belligerent. To a greater or lesser degree, which I think is quite an unfair thing for me to say, because George Ford is outstanding. I love him.
He's a quality operator.
The question is Marcus Smith.
The question is Marcus Smith. If Marcus Smith continues and makes himself undroppable, someone you must select.
Yeah, which I think Marcus Smith is not far off that at the moment. He was that good towards the end of last season.
So assuming that is the case and George Ford plays lots, if George Ford misses a big chunks of the season, then I think some of those wins could become losses. He's that important to them.
Yeah, George Ford is massive, isn't he? Massive. Yeah. And what, you know, the scrum half options they have are pretty cool. They've got the out and out starter, they've got a mixture of Wigglesworth or Van Portfleet, depending on which one that they need.
Or British and Irish Lion Ben Youngs.
Oh yes, their starter. Yeah, so I think he'll probably start. They've just got options. They've got options in a lot of places.
One player who's come in who I didn't mention was England under 20s, fly half / 12, I think he is. Dan Lancaster.
Oh,
son of Stuart.
Where's he come from? Leeds.
Yeah, I think he was at Yorkshire County or whatever they're called.
Son of Stu.
Wow, imagine that. Imagine that. I bet he trains well. Very good, very professional, I imagine.
He's maybe a talented kid.
I've heard this. But then you would be, wouldn't you, if your dad was the England manager and you've been steeped in rugby tradition your entire life and probably went to an outstanding private school with outstanding coaching.
I bet Stuart Lancaster is an amazing dad.
He does seem like a good dad, I've got to say.
Right, so where did Leicester finish last season? They were sixth.
They were sixth.
So we're into the top five. Next week we will do...
Maybe three.
5-4-3.
And then we're going to do 1-1.
Then we'll do 1-2. 2-1.
Yes, but 2-1 from the final rather than the
Exeter
league table. Exeter and Quinns will be the last two.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because I tell you what, Quinns have got a press conference this week.
Ooh.
To interview Tobias Mattsson. So I think that's on Zoom. I'm very much looking forward to that.
Did you see, final thing to finish the pod, did you see the quote that came from Gustard this week?
No. Do you know what I did see? My phone kept on flashing up, Gustard finally breaks the silence. I thought, I don't really care.
Yeah, it was one of those where I think probably more has been made of it than...
It
should have been.
Just to back that up, reading the rugby paper this week, I think it's a great publication. You should support it. It's great. But I read that and went, I want to ditch my subscription for this. Because
right, what did it say?
It was awful. So clearly rugby writers are struggling to find stories. So I could understand if the tiny little line from Gustard was whipped into more.
Did the rugby writers start by talking for a good 5 minutes about Whitney Bay? Because if they didn't, that's why they're struggling for content.
Exactly. Exactly.
The quote, I can't find, just very quickly looked, but he basically gave his opinion on Quinns winning the league, and the one line that caused the stir was, he said, "I'm delighted for most of the players."
Oh, come on.
Which is a bit like why did he need to say most of the players? And it's probably just...
Well, he doesn't know some of them.
There's a bit of clickbait. You'd be delighted anyone who wins the league.
Yeah.
It's been probably turned into more than it is, but it does seem a bit...
I'm delighted for most of the players. That is quite funny.
It is quite funny, yeah.
I'm sure he didn't mean it to sound as it does sound.
This is why some people legitimately hate the press. And to be fair, I can see this from both sides. What do you mean most of the players? Like, which ones... I mean,
tell us specifically which ones you didn't. You're not delighted for.
Was there not a follow-up question to that?
Not from the brief transcript that I've seen.
I can actually see... In fairness to rugby playback, I can see why I'd report that. Yeah, most of the players.
Equally, we complain when... We complain that people give platitudes and clichés and stuff, and if he's been completely honest there... Well, that's interesting.
He's only given half a story, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's not saying which ones.
Well, full whoever was asking the question, not for not going, tell us more.
Yeah.
Who weren't you happy for?
Yeah, or just to throw a comment, like, I guess they weren't all your cup of tea, right? Okay, well, no, I didn't say that. Well, what did you say? Christ, no.
Nearly another strong zero story there.
Christ.
Right. Well, so it wasn't really, he didn't really say anything of note.
He's at Jay Beardmore on Twitter. We're at Rugby Podcast. And you can email us, contactdegchasers@gmail.com. The only rugby podcast here for you 52 weeks of the year.
Where are the other guys? Where are they all?
I know. There's stuff to talk about. What's going on? Hopefully you appreciate that. If you do, thank you for listening. Hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast. That's one way you can show your appreciation. Another way is by supporting us at patreon.com/eggchasers. We'll see you on the next one. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.